You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. The December jobs report was released this morning, and he will tell us what it reveals. And Happy New Year to you, Mark.
Happy New Year to you, my friend. It's good to connect.
Absolutely. I know everyone's been waiting for this report. What's it look like?
You know, I think about some of the presents my mom used to get me for Christmas, and God bless her. I was always waiting for something a little better, but it looked a lot like what I got the year before. That feels a little bit like this jobs report. Lifesavers, for example, was a highlight back then. Just joking. I mean, that's true, but at any rate. this really does look a lot the same as what we had seen throughout the year. And a good example of that is 50,000 jobs added on the month. The average monthly jobs increase for 2025 was 49,000. It ends up being the case, Newell, that for the entire year, jobs creation was really lackluster, just nearly 600,000 jobs added. That compares to 2 million in the previous year. And so this was the weakest year for jobs creation since the pandemic year of 2020. Unemployment rate went down 4.4%. We'll take it. But this is really sort of a situation where it's a low hire, low fire job market. The good news is not that many people are being laid off, but the not so good news is not that many people are being hired as well. And you see that in the sector participation as well, where healthcare, social assistance continue to do the heavy lifting. Elsewhere, retail lost a lot of jobs here. The goods producing sector lost jobs, including manufacturing. So it's really is sort of a meh jobs report.
And, you know, that's the what, the outcome. What are the driving forces to these numbers?
Well, I think, first of all, let's think about, like, how did 2025 differ from the previous year? And there's a lot of volatility, a lot of disruption. The tariffs were probably the number one headline in terms of new policy during the year. Toward the end of the year, the Federal Reserve was cutting interest rates, but that doesn't really move the needle very much. And so I think there's a lot of hesitancy on the part of businesses, or don't really want to get out over their skis in the sense of bringing people on. But at the same time, they're not shedding workers in droves. And the data we also had this week on job openings, labor turnover, indicated that not that many people are quitting their jobs. So it really is kind of a frozen job market in some ways. And I do think there's some reasons to be optimistic for 2026. I don't think it's necessarily going to be seismic in the changes, but the continuation of the 2017 tax cut will put more money in people's bank accounts and actually have a lower effective tax rate. So there will be more discretionary income or just more money in the bank, broadly speaking. As we mentioned, the Fed has been cutting interest rates. It's slightly lower borrowing costs. Trump administration is trying to do something to bring mortgage rates down. I think, you know, we've already seen some impact on that in the marketplace in the last 24 hours. So affordability really is the number one challenge, I think. That's not a surprise. And the question is, how much is that addressed in the coming year? And I think it's really going to be more marginal improvement than it is going to be anything where we get to the end of 2026 and say, wow, everything feels so affordable again.
Mark, there's been a number of press conferences where the president and some of his spokespersons have addressed affordability and have given example after example after example of things that are more affordable today than they were maybe 2 years ago. Is that true or not true? Or do you see that in some of these sectors where things are more affordable?
Well, it's cherry picking, Newell. That really is the problem. And so if you're like me, you go to the grocery store and you see, okay, we're not buying beef this week, but maybe pork or chicken is sort of the choice in the protein department. And you know, a lot of it's been self-inflicted. Fortunately, the administration backed down on the worst of the tariffs for things like bananas, coffee, and more recently on the Italian pasta, which I've never really understood why it was we were sort of put the Italians in our gun sights. But at any rate, I don't think Americans are feeling that, and we don't really see it in, let's say, the broad brush strokes of how we measure inflation. And the other part of it is, Newell, you know, we talk about inflation, you and I have for a long time, but you know, most Americans don't talk about the inflation rate on a month over month or year over year basis. That's totally irrelevant to their lives. That's the thing that economists, journalists, and central bankers talk about. It's the price levels that really bum them out. And let's just, you know, when we're looking at inflation moving up at slightly less than 3% on an annualized basis, that means that we're continuing to build on the price increases that had occurred in recent years. And so there are also areas where there's outsized price increases or cost increases. The areas come to mind, of course, the price of housing has risen about 50% since the pandemic. A new automobile costs about $50,000, and borrowing costs haven't gone down that much from the peak. Of course, health care, insurance for homes and cars. So even if we just sort of have this average inflation rate of just below 3%, that doesn't help to make up for the areas that can knock you out of your stride when you're trying to buy something that is perhaps more significant.
So in some respect, then, we're still paying for the ills of the supply chain disruption that we experienced during the time of the pandemic. Prices went up at a very quick pace, but they're not coming down at that same pace, right?
No, they're not really coming down notably at all. And there were really, I would say, three dynamics. That one you just mentioned is the number one dynamic that pushed prices higher. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, sent commodities prices significantly higher. Of course, people are celebrating the relatively lower cost of gasoline these days. We'll take that when we can get it. And then the third thing is there was a lot of fiscal stimulus that was pumped into the economy by Congress, which, you know, I can remember when then Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who worked for the Trump administration in the first term, was saying, you know, if we don't pump a lot of money into the economy, we're going to be facing something like a 25% unemployment rate. So they did that. That was basically a bipartisan effort. It wasn't that one party was doing it and another one was protesting. There was a sense that you did need to do a lot. But in the end, it probably was too much. What you did get was the fastest recovery among the major economies of the world, being centered in the United States. The recovery was robust. But with that, there was a true price to be paid. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really looking at prices coming down significantly. I think it's more about a leveling off in the rate of the increases.
Mark, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not the Trump administration has had the successes that they were looking to achieve relative to regulatory changes. And they connected the dots to that will help stimulate, right, new manufacturing here, development of new manufacturing. Is it still premature yet? Do you think that that's going to come to fruition? Will it happen?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's just acknowledge that, for example, within this jobs report, we once again had a minus sign in front of manufacturing. And that's really been the case for more months than not in the past year. And the major index, which tracks manufacturing, which comes from a trade group called the Institute for Supply Management, the manufacturing data there has been anemic. I think at a base level, we all can concur that having a more robust manufacturing sector in the United States would have a lot of benefits. There would be the employment, there would be the economic activity part, in some cases, national security, where, you know, we need to be able to produce a lot of things in the United States in case supply chains are disrupted abroad, particularly from places like China or Taiwan. But it just hasn't happened yet. And I think that that is going to be a process to watch over a period of years, not months. And if it happens, it's probably going to be something that we would be talking about, you know, in 2027, 2028, 2029. And then the question is, how much do we actually reshore to the United States as opposed to manufacturing capabilities being just sort of taken out of places like China and taken to other countries? And I think, unfortunately, there's more of that going on.
Yeah, it's I guess some of this how do I phrase this? It seems as though there are some particulars of this that really seems to be confounding folks inside the Beltway in Washington. Is that a fair way to put it?
Well, I would say, as one who's resided around that area for many decades, the state of confoundment is a perpetual one, particularly among elected officials. I mean, I think, unfortunately, and this isn't a surprise to anybody, you have a situation where the political divide is so significant, the common good of Americans is not the priority of elected officials by and large. And I would say most of that blame is cast on members of Congress. And so where do we meet in the middle on solutions that, you know, I think reasonable people could agree on? Just look at the federal government shutdown as a good example of essentially a wasteful process. We are facing the prospect of that at the end of this month. And, you know, among the biggest issues that I look at from a financial perspective is the failure to address the looming shortfall of Social Security. That's been on the radar screen for years now. But, you know, God forbid elected officials would do something to help the balance of the American people.
Yeah. And I mean, I the over and under, I wonder what it's going to be, whether or not we're going to have another government shutdown.
I mean, there has been a so-called minibus bill moving through, and you know, there's a decent chance that gets passed. But I don't want to bet my money that Congress is going to overperform on its performance.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see when we see that inflation number drop, and it was what at 4.6, right? And it's down to 4.4. Is that correct?
Inflation peaked with the consumer price index as high as 9.1% in June of 2022. So that was, you know, getting back to numbers that were more akin to the 70s and 80s. And lately it's been tipping below 3%. And I think that's the expectation for this year, that we'll have the consumer price index rising in the 2% range.
Oh, I was referring to the unemployment rate. I'm sorry.
Okay, sure.
Was at 4.6 and now at 4.4. Crystal ball. You know, these employment numbers all over the place. What is the target for the Fed relative to that number?
Good question. Well, number one, I think the Fed just doesn't want to see a sharp rise in unemployment, and we haven't seen that. It's been, as I said, a low fire job market, and one of those is optimal and one of them isn't. By the way, the November unemployment rate was revised lower in today's update, so it actually went down to 4.5%. You know, you think about the worst episodes in American history, and we can just leave it at recent episodes, relatively speaking. The unemployment rate rose to 10% in October 2009, coming out of the great financial crisis. It was close to 15% at the worst of the pandemic, and we're nowhere near that. So I think it's more about trying to enable stability for the job market, and I would say we are essentially seeing that, but some people are raising the question, I think it's a good one, is that, you know, the estimate, for example, I'll get to the question in a second. The estimate for GDP in the final quarter of last year right now is running quite hot. And yet we have all the jobs data for that quarter, and jobs creation was lackluster. So one question would be, what happens if we get to a situation where growth in the U.S. actually, you know, starts to fade? Does that mean the job market does even, you know, less than what it's been doing. And I think that's one of the things that's on the mind of Federal Reserve officials, among others. In other words, could it get worse from here?
Yeah. Very, it's very interesting. These affordability issues, though, it's getting harder and harder to get my head around it. But I can tell you down here, it's insurance with housing. Yeah. I mean, it has completely killed the housing market down here. I mean, the numbers are staggering as to what people are facing. And I think that's why our out-migration numbers are as strong as they are. They can get more home for less money and less insurance costs in other places, you know, within a driving distance of Louisiana.
Yeah. Not unusual among any number of different areas around the country where these insurance costs are just sort of out of sight. And I don't unfortunately know that there's really a global solution for that either. And as you know, extreme weather events are part of the story there. You know, there are probably some regulatory issues that are related to this, but that's not really the chief dynamic. And so that goes back to what I was saying before. You know, do you think there's a reason why insurance costs should go, should not be increasing at all in the future? And it's really hard to come up with a scenario that allows that to happen.
Yeah. For sure. As always, we truly appreciate your time. Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup... not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mark Fry, who's a reporter with WCCO News Talk 830 in Minneapolis. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me this afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. Mark, if you could give us kind of the state of what is actually happening on the streets of Minneapolis and the public's reaction to this incident the other day.
So today we're seeing a little bit of a continuation of what we saw yesterday. So now we're a couple of days removed from the shooting of Renee Good at the hands of an ICE agent who has now been identified as Jonathan Ross. And right now, today, we're seeing more protests at the Federal Whipple Building in sort of the St. Paul, Minneapolis border area. It's at Fort Snelling, which is right near the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport. So a pretty busy area over there, that Fort Snelling area, kind of where ICE and federal immigration agents have been operating out of for the last several months. And over this past weekend, the announcement of 2,000 additional agents to the Twin Cities area. So today we're seeing more protests outside of that building. And there have been a few reports of chemical irritants being deployed by these agents. But so far, it just kind of seems like a continuation from what we saw yesterday.
Are they receiving any assistance from the Minneapolis Police Department?
They have not, no. So the Minneapolis Police Department, really local police departments have not been involved in any of the immigration raids or detainments of anyone here over the last several months and weeks. That's been a sticking point with the local leaders, with Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara. That has been the main message, is they are not involved in sort of any of these operations. They were on scene the other day after the shooting just to preserve what they called the crime scene, as investigators got in there and collected the evidence. And the evidence and sort of that the issue of that case has really been the focal topic today here.
In what regard, as to whether or not the state has any jurisdiction in this matter, or?
Exactly. Yeah. So yesterday it came out that the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which typically is hand in hand with the FBI in these cases, they came out and said that the BCA came out and said that they were being shut out of this case by the FBI after initially they were allowed to be part of this investigation. So a lot of local leaders today, Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty, Minneapolis is in Hennepin County, and then Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, just a couple of hours ago holding a press conference, and they're focused on collecting their own evidence. They're asking people to who were maybe near the scene, at the scene with home security footage, to submit evidence to the state for the BCA to look over for potential their own state investigation due to being shut out by federal authorities at this point.
We're visiting with Mark Fry, reporter WCCO News Talk 830 Minneapolis. What has been the reaction of the police chief? You know, I happened to pull up an article that you authored about a shooting December 11th. You may not know this about me. I served 40 years in law enforcement. I was an elected sheriff down here for 10 years. And I watched his reaction to a police shooting that I could argue one way or another as to whether or not it was a good shooting on December 11th. He has almost an entirely different perspective as it relates to this one, which is interesting to me.
Well, I think ever since the Trump administration announced that they were sending these agents into the Twin Cities to target immigrants, whether it was in any parts of the city, whether it was Minneapolis, St. Paul, or the existing suburbs, I think the main message I have heard from Chief O'Hara over the past few months has been these need to be done very carefully. And I think there was an overwhelming feeling that the worst could happen in these situations. And that worst being whether it was a federal agent getting killed or a bystander getting killed or someone who was protesting getting killed. I think that was the concern that Chief O'Hara had expressed. And he had really drawn a line in the sand of this is sort of the way the Minneapolis Police Department is going to offer their services in this time to federal agents. And this is not what they're going to be doing.
Yeah. How do you see this ending? I mean, you've obviously got your finger on the pulse down there. You kind of see the tug of war, the pull. I'm watching the videos on the screen as I'm broadcasting live here. It seems to be getting a little bit more caustic. The dialogue and the rhetoric is rising. You know, it doesn't seem like anyone really wants to step up to the podium and say, look, we got to let this investigation take its course. It will continue to reveal itself, and if there's something that's unusual or an anomaly that we have a level of discomfort, we'll challenge the federal government. We'll see what their reaction would be.
Well, yeah, I think you put that perfectly. It's a tug of war right now, honestly, between the state and the Trump administration. We've heard over the last couple of days the pretty drawn conclusions, whether it's from Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary Kristi Noem, President Donald Trump himself came out very quickly and established what they believe were the facts of the case. And I think the fact that the FBI has taken over and now is not including the Minnesota BCA, I think are going to continue to see an uprising of calls here from the state of Minnesota, from local leaders, from the public, just about involving local officials, because I think at the end of the day, it's what matters is transparency. And we saw this 5 years ago, 6 years ago, after the murder of George Floyd. I think everyone called for transparency in that. And unfortunately, we've gone through this a few times here across Minneapolis and St. Paul. So I think that'll continue to be the message here moving forward.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I think everyone's in their ideological corner on this issue. There's a part of me that doesn't even really believe this is about the shoot any longer. It really is about the tactics and strategies that are being deployed by immigration there, and the fact that they don't want it. And you know, it's kind of
so
interesting. You know, because when you just look at the characterization of Ms. Good, it first comes out that the mainstream media reveals that she was just driving through the neighborhood. Then we find out that she was a legal observer for a left-wing organization that perpetuates an anti-ICE mentality. Now there's video that just hit that's being provided by the New York Post about the wife of Ms. Good actually was the one outside of the car, and she's challenging the ICE officers and berating the ICE officers just immediately before Ms. Good pulls off. So the whole tenor of this thing has changed in a very short period of time. And that's usually what I tell folks. I said, take a breath, be patient, let this thing reveal itself, because the delta between where the story is now and where it's ultimately going to end up in my 40 years of law enforcement is going to be pretty wide.
And that was the message. Yeah, that was the message today from the attorney general here in Minnesota and the local county attorney is they're seeking every sort of whether it's video, photos, statements from people who were at the scene, because there weren't that many witnesses at the scene. I mean, there were plenty with cameras and stuff. But I think at the end of the day, too, like Keith Ellison said, in investigations like this, every minute is a volatile one because people start to misremember. They don't remember things that they saw because the people who saw this went through something traumatic. I mean, at the end of the day, this was still a traumatic incident for the people who witnessed this. So I think we're going to continue to see this evolve. And like you said, I think there's going to be an outcry still of sort of the tactics of federal agents, whether showing up at schools. Yesterday, there were reports that they were arresting individuals inside of a local Target here. I mean, there are still reports today that they are very active throughout all of the Twin Cities. So I think that's going to be still a focal point over the weekend with more protests planned.
Has there been any discussion about the criminal aliens that they have in the jail that they could turn over to ICE today?
And I've not heard that come up over the last couple of days, no.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. I mean, they talk about making the community safer. They're in the best position to do so. They have, over 600 in the jail today. They just, over the last 6 to 8 months, released somewhere north of 500. Back out onto the streets of Minneapolis. It's just kind of curious. The path of least resistance would be to cooperate with these ICE detainers and hand these individuals over that have been arrested for criminal behavior within their community.
And I think that's one of the sticking points for Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem is if you want to help us join with us and contribute to this. But I think at the end of the day, it's the tactics that are being observed by the public. I have personally, outside of my reporting job, I have seen immigration agents in different parts of the city not doing a lot at the moment that I saw them. But they're definitely noticeable. Just because over the last, few years, you're not used to seeing this many federal agents in your city, obviously. So I think that's the thing, the tactics of what is happening and just the overall presence is still going to continue to stoke that fire. And from the way it sounds, just from the Trump administration, despite the plea from Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey on Wednesday and his fiery speech where he let it fly, really, after the killing, they're going to remain here and continue their operations.
It's hard to walk back, though, when you have elected officials that have already prejudged this matter and call it a murder, and then complain about not being included in an investigation. Well, I could just tell you, I sat in that seat. It would be real difficult for me to invite an outside agency to come in if they went to the podium and they had already characterized this of events as being a murder. And why would I want to complicate this investigation anymore? You've prejudged it. You know it all. You hadn't talked to a single witness. You've looked at two videos and you've characterized it as a murder. It's like, how do you walk that back? You can't. And I could totally understand why they're not asking for their assistance, because I wouldn't want them in my shop either if they've already prejudged that case.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the main messages from the attorneys today is that they don't want to from their point of view, obviously, from their legal standpoint, they just want the BCA to have an opportunity to see the evidence here, because the FBI does have the evidence, including Rene Goode's vehicle. So that's a huge piece of evidence in this case, whether it's ballistics, forensics, things like that. And from that sort of standpoint, as the BCA, an independent agency, let them take a look and have a seat at the table instead of shutting them out completely, instead of having to draw conclusions from whether it was somebody's Ring camera or a grainy cell phone video or something like that.
But when we say independent agency, how do they define that? None of these agencies are independent. I mean, the BCA answers to the governor, right?
Yeah. That's, yeah.
The FBI answers to the Department of Justice and the president. I love the way that we talk about these independent agencies, you know, that these political leaders talk about it as though they're truly independent. They're anything but independent. And you know, I mean, the governor of the state went on air and said he doesn't believe they're ever going to get to a just and in a bias-free decision and justice with the FBI investigating this. Really? and you want everybody else to believe that the BCA is going to be able to deliver that? I don't get it.
Right. And I feel like they're relying the Hennepin County Attorney, Minnesota Attorney General today, just because this is so fresh, a couple hours ago that they were discussing this. I think they're relying on prior cases and involvement with the FBI through the BCA and sort of their joint investigations and sort of the track record that they have together. And the Hennepin County attorney has worked closely with the FBI. Minnesota Attorney General has as well. So I think they're going to rely, hopefully, on that sort of aspect of it. But you're right. I mean, I think there is obviously that gray area when it comes to the word independent. That's sort of in the eyes of the beholder, right?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is at that level of cooperation, and just so you know, I was very good friends and sat on many committees with Rich Stanek, the sheriff of Hennepin County. And the type of cooperation you typically see is when you have a state action and you request FBI input because of some of the assets and resources that they bring. I could tell you in my 40 years in law enforcement, we never participated in a pure FBI-related investigation of a federal agency, especially when it came to a shooting. I have never seen where local law enforcement is intimately and intrinsically involved during the course of that investigation, other than just the transfer of evidence that they may have collected in the preliminary situation. But because the Minneapolis Police Department removed themselves from working in a task force model with immigration, you don't even have that present because they weren't on the scene. And, you know, so I just find it pretty ripe because all these folks know this, to go to that mic, and I think they're just stoking the fire by saying, "Yo, man, you know, we need to be suspicious of this because we're not asked to participate." Well, I would challenge them to show me one case of a federal law enforcement shooting whereby they were intrinsically and intimately involved in the course of that investigation of that shooting in that they're aware with. And I suspect they're not going to be able to bring one forward because it doesn't exist.
And I think that's where we're going to keep seeing that tug of war continue over the next, you know, few days, several days, especially as, like I kind of said before, the administration, Trump administration, came out and quite clearly said what they thought was fact of the case. And the fact they said Rene Goodman was a domestic terrorist, weaponized her car, and that this agent is, quote unquote, a hero for saving his fellow agents. And I think that's just going to be more of the rhetoric from the administration. You're going to hear quite the opposite from local elected officials who today once again held a press conference just asking for a transparent investigation. So I think
it was careless.
Coming days, that's what we'll see.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was careless of the Trump administration to go right out there and start saying that it's domestic terrorism. I think that's careless. But, you know, the question is whether or not this individual was the state of mind that he felt like that he was at risk. And, you know, a car is a dangerous instrumentality. And, you know, those types of cases have worked their way through the courts to the U.S. Supreme Court a lot of different times, all coming pretty much to the same conclusion, that, you know, you can't have and judge split-second decisions like this in the comfort of your office in an air-conditioned room and draw conclusions from it because you're not there. You know, and the state of the mind of the officer is very, very important. We seem to have forgotten that. And that's why I brought up this other shooting case. You could argue that other case, you know, where the individual walked out of the house with the gun in his hand at his side, never pointing the gun at the officer, and the officer fired twice, but he missed him. And, you know, the chief is saying, well, this underscores the dangers of our officers every single day. And in a fraction of a second, they were faced with a life or death situation, quote unquote. Sounds a lot like what the officer had to deal with relative to the automobile. But I guess the politics of all of this and the ideology of this and the anti-ICE sentiment that's floating around is moving this in different directions for whatever reason. It's a head scratcher on many levels. And if you don't mind, we will check back with you because it's going to be interesting to see how long this conflict sits out there on the streets of Minneapolis.
Well, and now we have school districts, the Minneapolis Public School District, who canceled classes Thursday and Friday. So they're off yesterday and today. They'll be back Monday. They're offering remote learning for students until, I think, early February. And then there's more schools and districts coming out and saying this sort of, because there was an ICE operation shortly, a few hours after the shooting of Renee Good outside of a local high school here in Minneapolis. And there were chemical irritants deployed, and school officials are coming out and saying this isn't right. This is not where they should be happening. So that's sort of another. There's so many different spokes to this that we're going to start hearing more and more about, whether it's today, tomorrow, or even in the next week. So this
but was that an far from was home. That an action at Ford? The target was the school, or it just so happened to be something that occurred in front of a school.
So from the initial reporting is that it was at they were at the school. The ICE agents were set up near or at the school, and that this individual who they, I believe, arrested in a snowbank was in that area. I'm still learning more if that individual was part of the school or not, but there was a crowd there. Students had just been released, and I think they just kind of got caught in that mix-up. So that's, I think more details are going to be coming out about that just because that's another part of the temperature here in Minneapolis is not subjecting students to this with whether it's agents coming to the school, in the school, things like that. So more to just keep an eye on from this story.
Yeah, and the flip side to that is these perpetrators, these individuals know that if the schools are off limits, that's where they're going to hang. That's where they'll rent a place to live in, was directly adjacent to a school, because they know that they'll be subject to a lot of criticism. And I say that with a voice of experience, because at one point in time in this jurisdiction, when I was sheriff, we deported more illegals out of this parish than any other per capita in the country. Nobody really knew about it because we did it just very quietly, but we worked with an immigration task force and we brought about that. But the psyche of the perpetrator that we were looking for, they knew the weak points, they knew the friction points, and they were not shy about leveraging them. And we don't hear much of a discussion about that either, which is a little disappointing, you know, as it relates to some of the challenges that the ICE officers have out on the streets of our country. Thank you so much for joining us, Mark Fry, reporter, WCCO, News Talk 830 in Minneapolis, one of our sister stations. We really appreciate the time and the insight.
Yeah, thank you. Happy to join you again.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay
with tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
With us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to the talk lines. Brian, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Newell, here's the one thing that I think is going to be a problem is I saw the video, and there was a initial shot that looked like he was in front of the car, and he shot it through the windshield. But then he came around the side, and according the noise suggests there might have been two more shots with the window rolled down through the side. So I think it's going to boil down to did he just shoot through the front window windshield, or did something happen once the car started pulling away and he wasn't in harm's way anymore and he started putting shots through the side window?
I will respectfully disagree with you because of some of the firearms training. You will double tap, and as you're moving from his left to his right, he will continue to shoot, and then you have to understand you have one object moving in one direction, another object moving in the opposite direction, and on video it tends to look like it might be a little slower than what it truly is, but it's actually faster. So the reaction time of the individual as the car passes is not really able to react to it and not able to stop oneself from firing that second or third round. And having looked at video evidence in a number of shooting cases, probably three dozen, where all of this comes into play, and they'll be able to determine the angle, you know, of the bullet and of the spent cartridge, and they'll know which shot actually was the shot that impacted Ms. Good, with the forensic testing later. But that what you saw there is not unusual. Not unusual in the least bit. I've seen videos very, very similar to that one. All right, Brian, thank you for the call. We will be right back, folks. We'll check in with Scoot when we return. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Just a reminder, our coverage of the inauguration from the Sanger Theater will start at 8:10 Monday morning. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, coming up, we'll talk about the game last night, the game tonight, some of the games over the weekend. I mean, what an incredible game last night. Ole Miss almost pulled it off, but, man, Miami was just too much. Of course, you know, let's talk about that interference call in the end zone and the no call. Yeah, we'll get into that this afternoon.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a wonderful weekend.